I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Hey, welcome to episode 11 of You Had to Be There, the podcast where we deep dive into the world of concerts, musicians, the music industry, and more. I'm your host, Julia Gomberg. I can't believe we've hit double episode digits. This is crazy. Working on this podcast has been such a rewarding experience. It really never gets old to get to chat with some of the most interesting people in the music industry. And today's guest is no exception. Joining us this week is the incredibly talented singer-songwriter Sinead Angel, based in St. Louis, Missouri. Over the past decade, Sinead has collaborated with artists across multiple genres, from soul to pop to singer-songwriter and folk. Her latest project has been fronting one of the only Taylor Swift tribute bands in the country called Taylorville. Sinead said herself that if you told her that she was doing this even 6 months ago, she would have never believed it. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at the letter U, Had to Be There Pod, just to see how spot on she is as Taylor Swift when she's up on stage with her band. Plus, Sinead has also put together an incredible playlist for this episode featuring some of her musical inspirations and a few of her own tracks. You can find the link in the show notes. Thanks so much for tuning in as always, and I'll catch you next time.
Hi, I'm Sinead Angel. I'm currently based in St. Louis. I'm a singer-songwriter, mostly in the folk Americana realm right now, but I'm also a Taylor Swift tribute artist, which is relatively new, but it's like really fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, I am like so excited to ask about that. Like what a cool, just like a cool thing to be able to say you even do.
Something I never thought I would be doing. If you would have asked me even just 6 months ago, I would have been like, what?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm very excited to ask about that. Before I get ahead of myself. Yeah. So can you kind of share, like, where did your music journey start? Like, how did you end up, getting into the music scene?
So started when I was really little, actually. So my dad was a bar manager and then eventually a bar owner back when I was a kid in Baltimore. And anytime he would have like local bands playing, like he would just kind of push me up on stage during their breaks because he knew I liked to sing. And I would just like sing something a cappella. And everyone was like, oh my God, so cute, little girl singing. And it just kind of like fueled my passion for it. And I just kept doing that. Started writing my own stuff when I was probably in like fifth grade. First wow. song being about report cards. And I joined every choir I could. I got into music folk theater. I majored in voice in college and started singing in wedding bands, cover gigs, was in a couple of like local rock bands that didn't really go anywhere. And just did some EDM stuff. That was fun.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
All over the map.
Wow. So you really, since like day one, and I assume like, stage fright doesn't seem to be a relevant issue for you if your dad kind of just made you get up and give what you got, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he likes to tell me a story of like the first time I was like really little, maybe like 5 or 6. And I guess I had a really bad stage fright and I, you know, like puked all over the stage. Oh, I don't like God. When he tells that story, but you know, thankfully that hasn't happened since.
One and done.
Yeah. Got it out of my system.
Yeah, quite literally. Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I guess like I was just even saying prior to us recording, like I like to sing and stuff, but performing is like a huge fear of mine. So I have so much admiration for people who really like are performers. And I mean, yeah. What was like the musical theater space like for you?
I think like at first that was probably the scariest thing because, I don't know, like theater kids were always so intimidating because they were so extroverted and so like just really seemed to know who they were.
Right.
And that was Yeah. And that was so intimidating for me. I was like really shy, but it helped break me out of my shell a bit. And it taught me something that's like kind of been really helpful when it comes to like speaking of stage fright. Like when I was another character, like if I wasn't myself, it was a lot easier because I could just get lost in that other persona. So it was a lot of fun to just like play around with different characters, different, you know, roles, and taught me a lot about my own self as well. I think like the most interesting one was Spring Awakening in college.
I love that musical. I'm not a musical person, but that is hands down my favorite.
Yeah, it was quite the experience. I was Wendla, so.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
And it was college. So we definitely did like, you know, the more risque scenes.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Broke me out of my shell more than I think anything else in my life.
Yeah, that's fair for sure. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Now that I'm like thinking, I always listen to the soundtrack, but now that I'm thinking about the context of like the plot, yeah, that's heavy for sure.
Yeah.
Very impressive though. You saying, you know, performing as a different character or person, I think that kind of foreshadows the Taylor Swift tribute band a bit.
It does.
Right. And you said like you started songwriting at a really young age. What was that like experience like?
Yeah. I don't know. Like I always was making up little melodies in my head, and I would like take poems and like put them to melodies. Like one of the first things I ever recorded was like a, what do you call it? Like a bonus track on the mayor of Baltimore at the time was Martin O'Malley. And my dad had like pushed me up on stage at one of his band shows, 'cause he was a musician and he was in this band called O'Malley's March. And I like sang this little, like it was lyrics to an Irish lullaby, but I had never actually heard the lullaby. And I like took a melody that I heard from another Irish band that was local, and I fused them together and I sang it. And then that became like a bonus track on his CD.
Wow.
Yeah. So I started doing that. And as I got a little older, I started coming up with my own words, and I've always had like really big emotions. So being able to like put those into a song to make them, I always say like more palatable for other people to like listen to, it kind of became like the best way for me to express myself to other people. And so I just kept doing it.
Yeah. I mean, what a unique like first release story. Oh my gosh. That's really, really cool. And I know in your bio, you said like you started uploading your music even on like MySpace back in the day. I'm curious, like, what was it like releasing music back in like the MySpace era versus today?
I didn't really know what I was doing, to be very honest. My setup was awful. Like, I didn't know anything about production, but my high school sweetheart had like found Audacity. And he like downloaded it onto my computer for me because he knew I liked to sing and stuff. And I just started playing around with that. And I would like record these a cappella 6-8-part harmonies because I didn't know how to play an instrument, but I was a choir kid. So it would just turn into that. And I would just like record them, and they were probably terrible quality. No, they definitely were. And I would just plop them onto a music MySpace because anybody could have one of those.
Right.
And like you didn't have to have a distributor or anything like that. You could just like upload. There it is. And then I started playing around with like MIDI instruments on like this. I had like a keyboard that my friend let me borrow, and I eventually got like a proper microphone. And so I got a little more like interested in like the production side of stuff, kept uploading things. It didn't go anywhere, but it was a lot of fun. And it was my first foray into like meeting people online, like remotely, to like collaborate with.
Right.
And there was like this other kid at my high school that was like a rapper. He called himself the Pharmacist.
That's such a high school rapper name. Oh my gosh.
And so like we collaborated. This was like my first collaborator story, and it was so much fun just to like,
that's so cool,
start experimenting with that stuff.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's funny when I read MySpace, like I had such a flashback because that really was like the way music was distributed or released. Like I even remember I like wrote an article for my high school paper about all these artists that became famous from like putting their music on MySpace. And you know who was one of them? Taylor Swift. So again, yeah, that's how she got started. She was like uploading on MySpace. Whoa. Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, the amount of themes here already. It's so funny. but it sounds like, yeah, I mean, even just like the storytelling of your own music probably aligns a little bit with her because she's such a storyteller. Can you talk a little bit about more like what you write about, I guess, today?
Yeah. So I would say like my biggest thing is like I said, emotions. So obviously like it's an outlet for those. A lot of my songs are very much like conversationally written. I'm not like, I write poetry that's very, you know, metaphorical. It's got all the similes. It's got all the alliterations. It's got all of that over there. But my songwriting is a lot more straightforward. And just kind of like if I was sitting down and like talking to someone else. So there's like a lot of you and I and like, okay, for the most part. So like I do have some third person things that are more like storytelling, but
right,
I really like to kind of just get to the point. But I did write a song recently that was definitely more in a storytelling type of way. And it's called Force of Habit. It was a TikTok duet songwriting challenge that turned into a full song.
Whoa.
And cool. Yeah, it was just one of those, hey, duet me. And then I like wrote a little verse and then we decided to make it a full song and he produced everything and it became a duet. And we just like wrote this story of like this couple that kind of like seeing reflections of themselves in each other, but like it was all their bad habits is what was kind of like tying them together. And like, one of them ended up like getting sober and getting their life together. And then the other ones just like look back in the second verse and being like, good for you. I'm still drinking. Like, I don't
know. Wow. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And I can see what you mean. It's like different from your usual style. I like the way you described like the kind of like talking to one-on-one. That's really interesting, but it sounds like it's just really intuitive for you also.
It's basically like what I would put in my diary, but then to music. And I'm like, oh, I guess I might as well put this out there and see what happens.
Yeah. And that's so vulnerable. Do you ever, like, is that ever a fear or something that intimidates you? Like the vulnerability side of it?
Not really. I guess I just feel like there are going to be plenty of people that don't like it at all and it doesn't resonate to, but maybe there are 2 to 5 that it does.
Yeah.
And I just tell myself it's for those people. So
yeah. No, I think that's a really great perspective. And it's true. I mean, music is so personal and like you never know. Yeah, someone could stumble upon it and it could just really speak to them and it could turn into their favorite song. You never know.
Yeah. One of my more personal ones that I wrote recently, I have 2 versions out. It's I'm a birth mom and I placed a daughter for adoption about 5.5 years ago. Oh. And that one, it's the one that hasn't really gotten a lot of plays online, but it's the one that when I like played in person, like there's always one person that comes up to me and they were either adopted or they're a birth parent. And like, that's the one that like speaks to them. And it's like, okay, this is why I put it out there. It's like that person resonated to it. And not only does it make them feel seen and heard, it makes me feel less alone. So
yeah, right. I love that. It like, it's so almost reciprocal. Like it's like a cycle that, yeah, you give something and you get something back. How has it been? Like, I'm just curious. I always think TikTok is obviously like, I guess if we compare it to what we were saying with MySpace, it's like today's MySpace maybe, but obviously a little more complex. But like, how has that been a tool for you in terms of songwriting and connecting with other people?
TikTok's actually been like very important to me in that way. I didn't get into it until maybe 2021. Pandemic was still happening. And I was like living in a city, like I just moved to New Orleans, like right before the pandemic hit. And I didn't really get a chance to like get out into the scene and like meet people and make too many friendships. And I just had my second daughter and I was just like really stuck at home and alone, and I was working remotely and I was really bored and I didn't know what to do. So I just hopped on TikTok and started like duetting. And over time I started like putting my own little songs on there, like, you know, little minute clips of stuff I had just written. Mm. And I just started using it as like a tool to like, I picked up the ukulele during the pandemic and I was trying to teach myself how to play. So I'd use TikTok as an accountability buddy. And I'd be like, okay, I'm going to post a new TikTok every day of me playing ukulele. And I don't care if it's terrible. Like, I'm just, this is my learning journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And over time, I met a lot of other singer-songwriters on there, started making like genuine connections and friendships, and met future collaborators. My mix engineer I met on there. And yeah, it's been a really cool tool. And I think more artists really need to use social media in that way. I think a lot of people get stuck in thinking like it's not real, like any connections you make on there, like because they're virtual, they're not like real or valid in the same way that an in-person would. But
right,
if you think that way, you're like, you're missing out on so many opportunities.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Whenever because I've worked with artists kind of freelancing on the side of helping them with like release strategies. And I think TikTok intimidates people the most. I think it's a shame because like you said, social media, you know, it's a social platform. It's called social for a reason. And I think people forget that A, it's social, and B, like the appeal of it is that you can be authentic. Like it will resonate with, you know, not everyone, but definitely some people. And it ended up, sounds like it really paid off.
Yeah. And what's cool about TikTok is like that algorithm is going to push it to the people that are going to be most interested in it. And the worst case scenario is they see your thing, they're not interested in the first 5 seconds, and they scroll past.
Right. Right.
But it's going to push you to the people that are like interested in the same thing. So like using that to your advantage to like meet your people is great.
Yeah, for sure. Can you talk a little bit, I guess, for those who maybe don't know the platform super well, like when you were mentioning duetting and like that creative process, can you kind of go in a little more in depth about what that looked like?
Oh yeah. So it's one of my favorite things that TikTok allows you to do. They have like the two features, like duetting and stitching. And duetting is where like you can basically record a video right next to someone else's video. And like, let's say they recorded an instrumental and they're like, duet me. And it's, I don't know, an instrumental of a Coldplay song, and they want you to sing along. Right. And then you can add your video where you're singing along, and there you go. You just collaborated, not quite in real time, but definitely remotely. And it's really cool. And a lot of people they'll do that, but they'll be putting original stuff. Like maybe it's a beat that someone made, or there's this guy, John Mark Nelson, I really like. He puts together instrumentals and he's like, write a song to this. And then you like write it and you just like write the top line melody and lyrics, and then you can share it. And sometimes they go viral. And then
wow,
I've seen some of these songs turn into real songs that get released because they went viral and the original creator loved it so much. And I guess that's like what happened with Force of Habit on a much smaller scale. It didn't go viral, but we just both really liked it.
Yeah. Right.
But it's a great way to collaborate and meet collaborators.
Right. And it really is like the next best thing to, you know, doing it in real life.
Yeah. And it's also like, for me, it's been a great way to just practice songwriting. Like I'll give myself 10 to 15 minutes. Like they'll usually be 1 minute clips and they're like, write a song to this. And I'll give myself 10 to 15 minutes to just like free write something and then record it. And it's just like really good exercise for my brain.
Yeah. I love that. It sounds like you're very disciplined. I mean, even the ukulele part of it too, like it's like you're utilizing it in a really good way instead of just like brain rotting like I do and swiping for 2 hours without realizing it.
I do that too. Don't worry.
Yeah. I think it's required as a TikToker, you have to put in your hours of doom scrolling.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've even discovered some of my favorite musicians through TikTok as well. And I think the opportunity to be like really authentic is what I think a lot of people miss out on sometimes. Like they're so focused on trends that you know, they don't think outside the box. But like you said, the algorithm is scarily like smarter than all of us. So like, it's going to bring it to the right people. And yeah, it sounds like it's absolutely worth the risk of just giving it a shot.
Yeah, I think more people should just go for it. Just do it. See what happens.
Yeah.
See what and just happens. Remember that the people on the other end of it are also people too. So engage with them. That's important too.
Yeah, right. For sure. That's a good point too. Can you talk a little bit more about like your performance experience, like with bands? I know you said you've done a lot. It sounds like you've done a lot, but yeah, kind of can you walk us through that?
Yeah. So like, I guess the easy first thing is I've done a lot of cover gigs and that's pretty easy to put together. You just go out and you play popular songs at bars or venues. That led to a lot of wedding gigs, which were much higher paying and a lot more fun. And the level of musicians there, like I got to meet a lot of really what I call top tier musicians in a couple different cities where I've done them. And it's been awesome. Like it's like been my experience where I get to play with like a full like 10 piece band sometimes, wow, with like a full horn section, and everyone's really good because like they're the creme de la crop most often of the scene, and it's awesome. I've also done like a few original music projects, my first one being like an acoustic pop punk band when I was in community college.
Oh, fun.
And yeah. It started as a duo with me and this kid Hunter, and ended up being like a four piece. We brought in a piano player and a cajon player. It was like three part harmony. We were both writing songs. And so it was like 50-50 split of like songwriting between us. And I think it was some of the most beautiful music I've ever gotten to write. It was very heartfelt, but you know, sometimes people want to be rock stars before they're rock stars, and I'll just leave it at that. It fell apart.
Oh.
And then I didn't really do another like band until like I got to like, so that was community college. Then I went to Towson University for my official bachelor's degree. And I started a couple of small little projects that were like one of them was we were sort of writing original stuff, but it was mostly jazz standards because we were all jazz majors. That was very short lived. It was a boyfriend and we didn't last. So when we broke up, the band.
Yes, makes sense, unfortunately.
And then I started this band called Liberata with this incredible guitarist named Christy McDonald in Baltimore. And again, it started as a duo, ended up as a four piece. We brought in this really amazing bass player, Derek Wigman, upright bass. And then this guy, Asher Herzog, on drums. And Christy and I recorded a duo EP. So it was just the two of us. And that went really well, like considering that we didn't have any budget and like people just seemed to receive it well in like the really local scene. So we kept at it, brought in the other two people, and we ended up doing a full album. You can find it on Spotify under Liberata.
Awesome.
And yeah, it's like, I don't know, like it's a fusion of jazz meets rock meets a little bit of bluegrass. It was kind of
cool.
All over the place, but cohesive enough. And we all came from different backgrounds. And it didn't last because I think, one, we all had different ideas of what we wanted. But I am most proud of that one, I'd say. And I still like tell people about the music and tell them to go listen to it.
Yeah, I really want to check it out. The way you described the genres like fusing together sounds so interesting.
I'm very proud of it. And but because of and I had one more band that was kind of just never going to leave the garage, so to speak, but it was a lot of fun. It was during the pandemic. I met these guys on Craigslist down in New Orleans.
Oh my God.
And we would just like meet up once, twice a week. And we would just like work on songs. We started writing all these originals. We would record them. But then I ended up having to move to St. Louis. My partner got a job up here. And it was an opportunity for me to be closer to my first daughter, because she lives up here with her family.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so I was like, I gotta move. Yeah. And I was trying for a while to get the project to like finish remotely. We were going to try to record an EP, but I think I was like the only one who really was like interested enough to actually release it. Everyone else was right. Like, this is, you know, we're going to go a different direction. Oh, okay.
That's really, wow. Yeah. What a journey. I like love hearing just from the perspective of working with people in bands, because I think I've so far really spoken to mostly like solo singer-songwriters, and I never really stopped to think about how many dynamics are in a band and how many like lives and people's, you know, problems and things like can impact both positively and negatively. It's also funny because whenever I always see on Craigslist, because I'm always like looking, I live in New York, and like I'm always looking it up, trying to find some good apartment deal on Craigslist. And it's amazing how many people are looking to start bands on there. It's just so wild to me.
Yeah. And I, you know, some people would say maybe don't try to find your band on Craigslist, but that just happened to work out really well.
Yeah. I don't know how legit these are, but.
Like, it's always scary when you like never met these people and you're like going to someone's house, like a random address. But I like walked in and
for you.
But I walked in and it was like, I don't know, these two guys that are maybe like 10 years older than me. And then like one of them had like this wife and she was like, would you like some tea? And I'm like, okay, this is fine.
Yeah, it's like green flag.
Yeah, it was great. They were wonderful.
Well, it just sounds like good experience. And I mean, even now, it sounds like you look for collaborative opportunities. And I'm such a proponent about making internet friends. Like if you ask any of my friends, since I got my first AOL screen name, I was like, I am in random people. So I just think I'm weird, but like it resonates with me a lot of what you're saying, that like you just never know where things like that can lead you to.
Yeah. I think like one of the coolest opportunities I had remotely was actually, like, I don't know, I was like 23, and there had been this this engineer that I had met while working with a DC EDM duo. I would do like top line vocal stuff for them. Mm. And they're working with this engineer named Irgo, and he was really well connected, and he's like multi-platinum award-winning. I still can't believe like I got to work with him.
Wow.
But he was like back and forth between the US and Italy a lot, and had a producer friend there that was looking for a vocalist. And he had just worked with me with the DJ duo. And he was like, hey, would you be interested in this project? And it turned into like that guy was under a label, and it was like my first song released through an actual indie label. And it was like, wow, an EDM thing. They had a whole music video, and I didn't know what to do with it on my end. But it was getting played on like national stations in Europe for a bit, which was really cool.
So cool.
I didn't have any team. Like I didn't have management or PR right. or A&R, anything like that here to like know how to like push that on my end. So, and it was like an indie label, so it's not like they had like much international reach. So it didn't really.
Well, that's still really cool. Like what a unique.
Right. And it was all remote. Like I never met, right. Until this day, I've never met that producer in person,
wow.
But we've collaborated online. So
that's wild. Yeah. I also like, I went through an EDM phase, and I think what I've always liked about it though, are like, there are some amazing vocalists on some EDM songs. And I think like, there's like an untapped industry of like vocalists on that side that I'm always like, there's like one girl, Becky Hill, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's like such a powerhouse vocal, and she's on like a ton of EDM songs, and I just think that like, yes, some of the best singers are her vocalists on EDM songs.
They really are. And I think that's why I was so drawn to the genre. Mm. And why the genre, at least like for a minute there, was like drawn to me. And it was such a great exercise in top line melody writing for me to like just be given this like fully formed instrumental, and they're like, okay, write something to this.
That's so cool. Yeah. I guess like when you're a songwriter, like you probably like to kind of think outside the box like that.
I like hope to do that again. Like I'm like looking for the St. Louis EDM scene right now. Like, where are you? Do you need a vocal?
Yeah. I also wanted to ask about living there. Like what's the music scene like there?
So, it's actually really great. One thing I love about it is it was really welcoming. Mm. There seems to be a lot of like funk and Americana and jazz and hip hop, R&B. Like those are like the four right. biggest genres I found. But there's a lot of really cool players here. And the most interesting thing I found is because I'm assuming it's because it's so affordable to live here. But there are so many people that are based out of here that are like actually like nationally touring or internationally touring with like bigger acts, and they just like live here. So they're like back and forth between LA and here or New York or Japan. I don't know. And like, yeah. It's pretty wild. Like I've met some really cool people.
Really cool. Yeah. I would never have known that, but that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I'm always really curious whenever like a big theme with my podcast so far is like, I think there's for people trying to break into the music industry, like there's a misconception you have to be in New York or you have to be in LA. So I'm always curious to ask about that. And you're definitely the first St. Louis person, but I hear what you're saying, like where there's sort of like the home base and then, yeah, they kind of like go around from there, but that's really,
yeah, like as long as you're able to travel. I mean, so much stuff you can do remotely now.
True.
And like for performance wise, as long as you're able to travel, then you can really be like not anywhere. That could be a little difficult if you're like over in, I don't know, Russia or something. I don't know.
right.
But like in the States, it's, you know, pretty doable.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it sounds like the music, like all the genres you mentioned are definitely some of my personal favorites. So it's cool. There's such a like thriving scene there.
Yeah, it's really cool. And like coming up from New Orleans, it's nice. New Orleans had such a rich music scene.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot of indigenous music, though. Like there's a lot of stuff in New Orleans that I feel like you only find in New Orleans, which is what right. makes it so great. Here, it's like a lot of it, I feel like, is a lot more like translatable across, you know, other regions, if that right. makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. And I guess like even what you were saying, people are bringing in their own styles and.
Yeah. Oh, I also forgot there's a huge pop punk scene here.
Oh, can't leave that okay. out. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. What's that like there?
Well, to be honest, I did not know what Midwest emo was until I moved to the Midwest. But that's like obviously big here. But yeah, it's like I grew up listening to, you know, Paramore and All American Rejects and like, you know, that yes. whole group of, you know, and here there's just still like a lot of that. A lot of that kind of music. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with that scene either, but that was of all my music phases, that was my favorite and my like most nostalgic, I think. So that's cool that it's alive and thriving.
Yeah. Like that was something I was just not expecting when I moved here.
It is cool too. I think that genre is making such a revival right now. Like even that like Paramore is still absolutely killing it, and they have such a way of resonating with so many different generations. I think it really speaks to like the depth of that genre.
Yeah.
You were talking obviously a lot about like your band projects. How did your first solo EP kind of come to fruition? What was the process for that?
So I decided to go back to school and get my master's like 2022, and so I did like a program with Berklee Online to get that. And I needed a project for my culminating experience. And I knew I wanted it to be related to like my own music. And I'm someone who's like just a huge procrastinator. And I was like, if I make this attached to my schooling, it will force me to finish it. I ended up collaborating on it with a really long-term friend of mine that I met back at Towson University in Maryland. And we had like co-written a couple of songs over the years. And I just hit him up and I was like, hey, I'm doing this school project. Like, do you want to help me make an EP? Do you want to be my producer? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, awesome. And it was cool. It was all remote. Like, he was down in New Orleans. Wow. And I was here in St. Louis, and I recorded most of the vocals like in my bathroom. And I just like sent them his way. And then he recorded all the instrumentation down there, or like brought in a session player, like if he couldn't play an instrument. And then we sent it all up to this guy I met on TikTok who lives in Ontario, Canada, and he mixed and mastered it.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's so, that's just like, yeah, fully proves your whole, your passion for like remote collaboration, I guess. It really, it's like a success story.
And it was super DIY. Like, I had maybe $800 of a budget, and all of that went to like mixing and mastering and paying for the like DistroKid fees to release it.
Right. Right. Of course. Do you feel that doing the master's program like has impacted your artistry?
Absolutely. I think like the biggest thing was just putting myself into a business mindset. I think that's something artists struggle with, but they need to have it.
Yeah.
Especially now when everything is so like do it yourself. Like, even if you're signed to a label, like they're expecting you to be like doing most of the work yourself, like most of your social media marketing, even recording your own stuff in your home studio. Like, they're a lot less hands-on than they used to be, I feel like. So you kind of have to like know what you're doing a little bit, like what's your brand and how to get it out there and stuff I never thought about. And it's stuff I'm still figuring out, but I've got that mindset now. And I'm like, you know, trying to like preach it to every other small artist I know, like the importance of like, you can't just be a musician. Like, you have to think of yourself as a business if you want your music to be like to ever make you money, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And also just like to gain traction and gain an audience. I think it's like, it's not just, you know, I guess back in the MySpace days, uploading it onto a page and just crossing your fingers. Now it's like you're the jack of all trades when you're an artist. It's a lot. I was on the artist management side at a label, and I can speak from firsthand that I did a lot of like advising and suggesting, but at the end of the day, it's the artists that are doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah. And
I was always really impressed. I think you have to have such a strong work ethic for that too.
Yeah. And it's something I didn't have in my 20s. So I feel like it's perfect timing that I like went into that degree program when I did. And I don't know, like the last couple of years, it's just kind of like snapped me too. And I'm like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I got to do it. I'm running out of time.
No. Yeah. But I think that's also, I think that's such a good point too. It's never too late. You know, people, I think, can use that as an excuse sometimes of like, oh, you know, it's too late, whatever. I have too much other stuff going on. But I think when it's your passion, there's always time for that.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I do believe that a good song is a good song, no matter, you know, how old the artist is or, you know, who put it out. And I think, you know, you just got to keep writing and keep putting it out. And maybe one of those songs will be that good song that resonates with the world. You never know.
Yeah. I love that. I'm also curious. This is a topic I've had a lot of female artists and producers on, and I'd be like remiss to not ask about, you know, your female experience in the music world. It sounds like you have collaborated with a lot of men. I'm just curious, like, what has that experience been like for you?
I complain to my partner about this all the time. it's kind of been different in each city I've lived in. So I've lived in three different ones, and I think, like, surprisingly, the Midwest has had a lot more misogyny than I was expecting. Cause like all you hear about is like people in the Midwest are so nice, but there's like a lot of people, like, I don't know. I felt more objectified in a way here. Like, I feel uncomfortable at gigs if I'm like the only woman in the room, like not necessarily because of the other musicians, but you know, I've had that those run-ins too. And it's just, for whatever reason, seems to be that the people that I've clicked with most 80% of the time here are transplants. Like, they were not born here. Like, they're either from the East Coast or the West Coast or somewhere else. And so, like, that also has kind of like led me to believe like it must be a Midwestern mentality, like, yeah, that people don't even realize it's so subconscious, I think.
Yeah.
Like, never before in my life have I been asked to sit in at a gig. Like someone's invited me to sit in at their gig to just like sing a song or whatever. Usually that's just, you know, show me your chops, show me what you got. It's a networking thing.
Right.
But here, at least two times now, it's with two different like bands, musicians, whatever, it was like a weird way of them hitting on me. And I'm like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it had nothing to do with me singing or how well I did. They were just like trying to get me there so that they could just like hit on me. And there was actually no interest in collaborating or, wow, or networking or anything. So that was the first place I've ever experienced that.
Ugh, yeah, I don't like that. But I can imagine. It's like, yeah, it's what you're saying too. I think I'm not even blaming it. It is like you said, it's like a subconscious thing. Like, I don't think most men or just people realize what kind of a precedent that they're setting. And maybe that's just societal or like patriarchal, but like, I think that's why it's important to talk about it, just so that people are more aware of it, you know, take like a, yeah, little bit more accountability from it.
And there are like so many male musicians I've worked with that are super respectful and like,
right,
definitely like have shaken that kind of thinking out of themselves if it was there to begin with. I don't typically have issue with most of the men I've worked with. And if I do have issue with any of the men that I'm potentially going to work with, I just don't work with them.
Right. Yeah. Simple as that, I guess. Yeah.
Like, there have been people who are like, who've like hit me up online and they're like, hey, you should let me like be your guitarist and, you know, let me do this gig with you. And then they get weird leading up to the gig and I have to like make an excuse as to like why they can't be on the gig anymore. And I get someone else who's not creepy.
Right. Right. Yeah. I guess in some ways, like, you have power in that situation, which I like, but at the same time, like, it's annoying people like waste other people's time with that BS. But
yeah,
but I think also I would imagine like using such like a virtual platform, it must be somewhat easier to set boundaries in a sense.
It is. I mean, just give a person 2 weeks to like have access to your DMs and you'll know very quickly if they're professional or unprofessional.
That's sad, but I fully believe it. I mean, that's what it's like on dating apps, honestly. After three exactly. messages, you'll know, unfortunately. Since songwriting is such a passion of yours and it is such a personal creative outlet, how has it been like doing covers? Like, what do you get out of that?
I feel like I have a pretty unpopular opinion amongst musicians with this. Most musicians would say like cover gigs are the last thing they want to be doing. But for me, like, maybe it's because I'm the vocalist. Also, as a songwriter, I'm learning as I'm performing these songs, like, what are the songs that made it as classics, as hits? Like, what are the things that are popular and what can I learn from them? Like, if right. I could analyze these songs, like, what makes them stand out? Why do people love them so much? And I'm learning great technique. Like, just the one thing that I got out of doing so many cover gigs when I was in school, I was not learning pop voice. I wasn't learning how to belt properly and building up my stamina in that way. I was either doing classical or jazz. Singing so many covers, like, with these powerhouse vocalists behind them, like, you know, Whitney Houston and, you know, Tina Turner, like all these big powerhouse belty singers, I've had to learn how to belt healthily.
Right.
And that has made it so that I'm able to write more belty songs myself. And for like the Taylor Swift stuff, like, I got stamina for days.
Yeah, I'm sure. Oh my gosh.
Like, you don't really belt the same way in classical. Like, so it makes sense to tell someone not to like sing that way, but there is definitely a healthy way to belt. There are vocal teachers out there that teach pop voice and belting the healthy way. You can even like scream healthily. It's just all about technique and finding the right teacher for it. But I've always had trouble. I feel like pop vocal teachers are kind of hard to find. So I've had to just learn it on my own.
Yeah, no, that's so true. You just like unlocked such a core memory for me. I remember like I had this vocal, like a classical vocal teacher, and she taught me how to scream at like concerts and like sporting events without straining my voice. And so like to this day, I like scream like I'm like an opera singer. Like I can't like yell. Like it's just my, I'm like trained in this like high like head voice. Like, I don't know. I guess it's a good thing because I'm not like straining my voice, but like I physically cannot just like scream.
Yeah.
Are there any standout covers that you love to perform?
Yeah, it changes. It definitely switches up. I think I'll always love singing. What's that Alicia Keys song? If I Ain't Got You, like I'll always love singing that song. I really, really enjoy singing anything Bruno Mars.
Another good one. Yeah. Yeah.
And anything Amy Winehouse. Like Valerie is like my go-to song. I could sing it in my sleep. And like, yeah, that's always the one I want to sit in and sing.
That is honestly such a cool flex to say like you could sing Valerie in your sleep, because that is not an easy song at all. The breath control for every, oh my gosh. Funny enough, I actually, when I was on the artist management side, I worked with Alicia Keys. So I, But If I Ain't Got You is a classic. And I think that was actually the first song I ever performed at a music, like a singing recital. So definitely a good one.
Love that song.
So now I think we can kind of go into like, where does Taylor fall into all of this? I'm dying to know.
Yeah, so this is so random. I mean, I've always been a Taylor Swift fan. Like, she's only a year older than me. So as she was coming out, I was like, as a star, like I was, you know, 15, 14 maybe, because I think she came out when she was 15. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been following her music. I was a singer-songwriter. She's a singer-songwriter. Like, she's definitely a good person to like aspire to be, I guess. But it wasn't until I moved to St. Louis that I was like really quite aware of just how big tribute bands are. So the pop punk band I was in when I was young, the guy Hunter in that, he ended up being in a Green Day tribute band for a while. And he was saying how it was like so fun. And it was like probably the best paying gig he'd had. And it was like he could travel. He felt like the rock star he always wanted to be finally. And and it was like he just kept telling me, you should do a tribute band. You should do like Adele or something. And I was like, oh my gosh. I don't know if I have it in me. But then I like moved here and tribute bands are like really big in the Midwest. And
wow.
I think part of it is like there's, you know, not as many cities in this part of the country that have these big arenas that these huge artists can go to.
Yeah.
Like there's Chicago, there's St. Louis, there's Kansas City. But like everything is just so spread out.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So these tribute bands get to go into these smaller, more intimate venues and they can cater to like being like the budget friendly version of stuff. Or maybe that artist isn't around anymore. Like some of these tribute bands, just like they're selling out like crazy. It's nuts. People love it.
That's so crazy. Honestly, like I don't know much at all. Like I'm kind of blown away by this. I'm not like, I see in New York City, they have like a lot of tribute bands, but I didn't think about it in what you're saying, like market wise, that makes a lot of sense in the Midwest.
Yeah. I was like going to these blues jams and I was, you know, singing Valerie. and the sound guy one day is like, hey, have you ever thought about like being in a Taylor Swift tribute band? And I'm like, no, but sure. I'll think about it. And so like he hit me up a couple months later and was like, hey, do you want to come audition for this? And I'm like, sure. And I go and I audition and then like they offer me like, do you want to be in this? And at the time it was just going to be like one show.
Oh.
And like, because he would do like an Amy Winehouse one, maybe like once a year. And this was just going to be like just one show at this performing arts center. Then the show sold out and then they added another night and then that sold out. And the shows themselves went really well. So we're like, we should keep doing this. So then we just kind of dived in head first and kept rolling with it and started reaching out to other venues. And now we've got like all these spots in the Midwest. We have 3 shows coming up this weekend in the Chicago area. It just kind of like went crazy. And then as I dived into it, I was like, you know, looking at all these other Taylor Swift tribute bands, because there's several in those states. My favorite one is down in Texas, the Lover Taylor tribute. Like, we're like more of like the rock band version at this point. Like the way we're set up, like we don't have like the choreography as on point. Like it's like we've got the essence, but like they're very much like replicating and doing it really well. That's the cool thing too about tribute bands is like everyone has their own little flair and their own way of doing it.
Right.
So like you get a little different flavor with each one.
Totally. That's also a good point in general with covers. Like, I think it's so impressive when people kind of make it their own. Like I mean, both are appealing for different contexts, but like as someone who struggles with songwriting, like I love to sing covers. It's like my favorite thing. Like all I do is go on YouTube and like find instrumentals and stuff, or like try to learn the chords on piano. But it's kind of, I guess what you were saying earlier too. It's like lyrically, it's powerful and resonates not just with the audience, but with the singer too. And so I find it like super cathartic to do covers. But that's so crazy. And now I fully believe you. Like when you said 6 months ago, if you knew you were in heard you were in a Taylor cover band, you wouldn't believe it. Cause isn't it funny how those things just like end up when you least expect it, like gaining traction. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I guess I'm doing this now. Like,
yeah. And it happens so fast. And like now I'm, you know, like just gathering all of the costumes and like, we just invested in our own video wall. Like we're just like really, we're going at it. And it's so exciting. And like, I really look forward to like where it's going to take us. And just from like a performance standpoint, like the amount of experience I'm gaining from this, like, but there's like nothing like getting out in front of a crowd of like 500 to 1,000 people that like know all the words to every song. And you're all just like singing along together. And I don't know. And then I'll have like little girls come up to me afterwards and be like, thank you for doing this, because I probably won't ever get to see the Eras Tour. And this is like the next best thing. And then there are some people that like, they're going to this to kind of prep for the Eras Tour in a way.
Oh my gosh. Damn. Like those Swifties are no joke.
I know. Like they've already got their tickets to the real deal, but they're just like, this is just, you know, the teaser trailer, like just for fun.
Oh my god!
Get our feet wet.
I kind of love that. Yeah, it's like the pregame of the real deal.
Yeah,
that's so funny. And you mentioned like costumes, like that's so cool. So is that what is like stage design wise and costume wise? Like, what has that been like?
I've never done costume changes outside of like theater, and even when I've been in theater productions, it's maybe like 1 or 2 changes. And now I've got like 7 different costumes. We're about to add an 8th one because she has a new,
oh my gosh,
you know, trying to like do the changes like in 30 seconds or less and get back on there. And you know, it's so much fun.
Talk about stamina. Damn. That's like, I'm tired just even imagining that. Honestly, you must have like so much more like respect for her too, as a performer, I would imagine.
Absolutely. I mean, and I already had so much respect for her.
Right.
Like I love I watched the Eras Tour on like streaming like a few times now. And I'm just amazed, like just any level like that, like her, Gaga, Beyonce, like Katy Perry, all these big stars that put on these huge productions. It's insane. To even try to capture that essence is, yeah, it's incredibly humbling because they're doing so much.
Yeah. It's like a whole other level of understanding what they must be doing. Like, I just can't even imagine. I guess you kind of mentioned it, but like, obviously her fan base is so big and so, I think, influential. Like, how has that been connecting with the fan base that come to your shows?
So the shows that we do, the biggest portion of her fan base that comes is going to be like the younger girls.
Right.
So like the 6 to 12 year olds and then their moms is like, so, I mean, it's great for the moms because to take their kids to like the real deal is so expensive, and not just right. with the price, but like the amount of time, like, and as a mom myself, like just navigating anything with children is like a whole other experience.
Right.
So for them, like I've had a lot of moms like very happy that these types of concerts exist. It like makes their life a lot easier, and the kids have
right.
just as much fun, if not more, because it gives the kids this opportunity to like get up close to the stage, and like, you know, they would never be able to do that unless, you know, they were really, really lucky.
Right.
So this gives them the opportunity to like get that concert going experience where they can like give the high fives and get the close up shots and, you know, really just yeah. immerse themselves in the pretending, I guess.
Yeah. What a positive influence to have on young girls too. I think like that's one of my favorite things about Taylor. I think she's a really amazing role model. So even that you get to kind of create that is really special. And I think really important for like young girls to be able to see like up close, you know, because I'm sure there's so many that picture themselves on stage when they watch you.
Yeah. And in a way, like this is a new, it's kind of like showcasing like a new avenue for them too. Like,
right.
You know, I might never be a pop star, but I could always impersonate one.
Yeah. I mean, totally though. You're like, especially like what you're saying in the Midwest, it's clearly like, yeah, it works. So I want to go.
Yeah. And I mean, I want to go see like I've been saying this to my partner for a while now. Like, I really want to go see a Spice Girls tribute now. Like,
oh my gosh, that would be so fun.
I would be so for it.
Yeah. Do you see this being kind of like a long-term situation? It sounds like at least in the interim it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can't really tell. I'm not sure. I know like Taylor Swift is going to have a very long career, you know? So
totally
like in terms of tribute artists, like I don't think any Taylor tribute artists like would have to worry about it being not relevant anymore. And also just like, look at Elvis, like there's plenty of Elvis impersonators still rocking and rolling and
oh my gosh, yeah,
good doing point. Their thing. But do I see it as like my lifelong career? No.
Right.
But I'm gonna ride the wave and learn as much as I can from it and enjoy every single second of it, because it has been so fun and continues to be really fun. And yeah, but like I've mentioned before, like ideally the dream would be like all of this experience would be transferable over to like my own career someday, like my stuff, but then I'm also right. sharing like the Taylor stuff. And I think a lot of people have been finding the journey interesting.
Yeah. Like,
a lot of my TikTok followers, I don't think are Taylor Swift fans, at least the earlier ones, but I think they're really enjoying watching me pursue something like this. Like,
right.
Even if it's just out of curiosity or just like the fact that it's just like, wow, like this is just cool and out of nowhere and I'm here for it.
Right. A few last questions that are a little more like random, hypothetical, fun ones that will maybe put you on spot. So I'm curious, do you have a favorite Taylor song or album that you perform?
So my favorite Taylor Swift album is Folklore, and I am sad to say we only do one song from it.
Well, she's like many albums. Oh my gosh, yeah. It's like you said, the eras.
And we try to do like more of the dancey, more upbeat ones, and Folklore and Evermore are definitely like slower, mellower, moodier right. albums. I think my favorite one to perform of all of them is like the Reputation set, just because it's so much energy.
Right.
And I think that album kind of got mixed reviews, I think, when it first came out, and it didn't get as much appreciation as it should have at the time of its release. The tour did really well, but I think non-Swiftie fans were like, what is this? Because it was such a drastic change in her right. persona and look. But it's that album goes hard, and I recommend stick to it.
It's funny because I totally agree with you, and like know from my friends that was their takeaway with it, that album. But it's I wouldn't say I'm not a Taylor fan. Like, I've listened to her since I was, like, you know, 14, but, like, never like a Swiftie, I could say. But that Reputation, when I heard that, I was like, whoa, wait a second. Taylor's kind of cool. Like the edge to that album a lot. I still listen to it a lot. It's really different, but I love it for sure. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I think it's a great pop record.
Okay, other question. If you could work on an album with any singer, dead or alive, who would it be?
I think it'd be fun to do like a duet album with like a male singer.
Ooh.
I think, like, currently I've been listening to like a lot of like Noah Kahan, as I say his last name.
Yeah.
I've only ever seen it written. Kahan. Yeah. I've only ever seen it written. Never had anyone say it to me. I love his voice. I think it'd be cool to do like an album with him or like Hozier, maybe. Like, just because I'm definitely more in like that folkier world these days in terms of my writing and singing style.
That makes sense. I agree. And I love that type of music is kind of hitting the mainstream right now. It's like very refreshing, I would say, especially from like male singers. It's like, because those two, like Hozier too, like, oh my God, what, talk about like soul in their voices.
I know.
Like, yeah, that's a good pick. I don't know if you're familiar with Orville Peck.
I will get familiar.
Yeah, he's like one of my favorites. He's like more country, kind of bluegrassy singer. He's country singer, but he's gay, so he's kind of like bending the norms of like the genre, which I really like. And he actually just released an EP of all duets, so I would definitely implore you to check that out.
I will.
Yeah, when you said duets, it just made me think of it. Yeah, they're all really different and really different artists, different backgrounds. But if you had a song that you wrote that you would hope to be one day a song that other artists covered, what would it be?
Ooh. That is a great question. I'm trying to think. I think it would be cool to hear some other artists do like my song, The Blow, especially more like soulful singers. Like when I first wrote it, I was listening to a lot of Leon Bridges. So I think it'd be really cool to hear him cover it one day.
Oh, such a good singer. I love him.
So yeah, that's what I would say for that question.
Love it. That was quick. I'm not putting you on the spot too hard, I think. Okay. And then my favorite last question to ask, if you could create the name of an album title of your music career so far, so an original album title, what would you name it? This is the one that puts everyone on the spot.
Maybe I would just call it, I don't know. Like, can't decide.
I think that's fitting in a way, because like, you just like everything you've done is sort of like, I don't know, like here you are, but
all over the place. There we go.
All over the place. That's a good one. I think that's the most deserving of that title. Well, really cool. I am so excited to check out all your stuff. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you?
You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all under Sinead Angele. Sinead Angele.
Thank you so much again for coming on. This was a really fun one.
Thank you for having me. I feel it kicking in. Sage advice and wisdom.